Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, folks. This is Dave Schmidt. I'm your host here again tonight on the Sedona Connection. I want to welcome you here the first week in December, December 4th, as the year is rapidly coming to an end for us here in this wonderful year of 2013. It's an exciting year, an eventful year, and for many of us that are involved with this whole Dinar issue, it has been a year of patience. Is that the right word to use, patience, that it has been for us this year? We have been patiently waiting. We have been following the different blog sites, been up and down. We've been kind of in that perspective where a lot of them are saying, you know, when's it going to happen tonight? There's been some really good information that has been coming out, but also we're beginning to learn a lot through this process. Last week, if you folks were here, well, let me say this. First of all, thank you for everybody around the country that's listening to the program live. If you want to talk on the program tonight, if you've got some comments, if you've got some questions, please feel free to call in. The number there is 646-716-8069, and you press the number 1 on the phone. And that puts a little kind of hand up here on my switchboard to let you know that you would like to come on the air. And I need to say something up front. My wonderful, wonderful helper, Penny, is not with us tonight, so I'm running solo. So what that means, folks, is I'm just going to have to bring you right on the air directly myself. So, and if we run into a problem like we had last week, if we go off the air early and there's no sound, I don't know that. I'll get into that in just a little bit. So I won't know that. So here's what I need some help from. Those of you that are in the chat room, now to go into the chat room, you have to actually sign in a name to be able to put some comments there. Would you do me a favor and let me know if we get cut off the air? See, I don't hear that. I have no way of knowing that actually happens. And last week, it was Penny who was able to come into the room and tell me, says, hey, Dave, you know, you're off the air. You're gone. And I kept talking for another 2 or 3 minutes and didn't even know. So I asked for your help on that because we had scheduling conflict come up, and she had to be obligated to something else. It was a misunderstanding between her and I, my mistake. But I can handle this. I can't actually do this all by myself. It's always nice if I have somebody else to kind of talk with you beforehand before we bring you on the air. And then last week at the 27-minute mark, I got cut off the air. Folks, I don't have any idea. I don't know if somebody out there was playing, you know, games with us and trying to, because they didn't like what we were saying, or if it was actually just the timing of something that was technical that happened with Blog Talk Radio or even happened with my phone, because I do talk over my cell phone here on the program. Because what I did hear that there was another Blog Talk Radio program that was on the same time as we were, and they got cut off as well. So we just don't know. But here we are. We're here tonight. And it's another week, and it's getting closer. And I did write the NDA article last week. I'm going to take a couple minutes tonight, and I want to talk about that, but I don't want to go into too much depth about that. I guess here's kind of why. You know, I wrote it. I felt it was something that needed to be addressed. The NDA, the non-disclosure agreement, being forced to sign that thing, it can create a lot of apprehension within us, a lot of fear, a lot of concern, a lot of worry, a lot of what in the world is going on? Why are we doing this? And I try to come in and address the issues from a realistic perspective, because sometimes when some of the blog writers are making statements or saying stuff, they don't stop to think through of how is this going to happen? What is it going to do when they attempt to implement? What is the outcome of this? From NBAs to having to fill out, you know, having to go into the bank and have a non-interest-bearing account, to other things. Even Mountain Goat, in her previous dinner posting last week, she was calling some of the stuff that says, this stuff is just ridiculous. There's so much stuff in there. Because we want to trust these blog writers, and the ones who have the big, huge conference calls, we just blindly accept what they have to say. It creates worries and concerns. And most of that just doesn't have much basis in it. So the non-disclosure agreement, if you ask me now, what is my opinion? And folks, this is just strictly my opinion. I really don't know. Because it's only a few of the blog writers are saying that it's going to be enforced. And it comes back to, you want to trust what they have to say, but you also want to say, gee, who's telling them this stuff? Because it's just not realistic. So we really don't know what's going to happen with this. But in some ways, you have to be prepared. And here's my thought. They may try to implement it. Let's assuming they do try to implement it, and it is implemented. I have a lot of confidence, and I have a strong belief it won't last very long. It's supposed to be a 10-year document. I wouldn't be surprised if it gets thrown out within a few days to 1 week to 2 weeks, because I wrote about that in the article. You just can't keep this quiet, and that's their whole intention behind it. And when you sign a legal document like that, there has to be what is called a verifiable reason of your intent, of what it is you're trying to do, and that can be fulfilled. Well, you can't. How are you going to hold somebody reliable? How are you going to hold somebody accountable for accidentally saying something about it when you can't keep this thing quiet at all? It's all over the Internet. 5 million people. How do you silence them? You just don't. So I wanted to address that because there's just a lot of fear that is out there. And as you were getting to know me, I'm really big about that. I'm really big about understanding the power and the energy that comes from fear. We all know, we've been taught, we understand this, it's been passed on to the mass, through the masters, through us, through millennia. Love is the most powerful, powerful energy that there is in the world. It's the most wonderful thing that there is in the world. And fear is the opposite of love. And it's so important that in our lives, we learn how to recognize that. Learn how to recognize it when it comes at us and be able to just say, no, I'm not going to allow that to control my life. Fear is probably the most demoralizing, the most paralyzing, the most degrading energy that is out there in the universe. It stops us cold. It robs us of life. It robs us of who we really are, what we can do, what we can accomplish. I can remember all the years growing up and also in my early years that, you know, I was in business and my early years in politics, how fear would stop me from being the person I really wanted to be, from being the person that I thought I could be, from accomplishing the things that I wanted to accomplish. Fear would come up and I'd stop and cower and go on my way and just walk away and not make that part of something viable within my life. And the NBA is such a powerful fear factor. People, what I call the powers that be, the powers that were is what I'd like to really call them. But, you know, the dominant controlling powers that be, fear is their biggest weapon. If they can keep us in fear, they can control us. And I still think there's some form of a controlling factor just from behind the fact that that's being put out there. And we'll know more as all this transpires. But it really, as the more and more that this goes on, the more it begins to raise questions with me about what's really going on. How much of this can we really trust? How reliable is the information that is coming from some of the larger bloggers? And I want you to know, folks, because let me say this also. Why do I recommend Dinar Recaps? It's not that it's such a great site, and I don't agree with everything that is on there. It's because it's a broad-based site. You're going to get a broad-based perspective so you can read and understand and learn for yourself some of the stuff that's developing that's taking place in there. Because you're going to get opinions on all sides. And I don't agree with them all. I don't even come anywhere close to agreeing with them all. But I'm also admitting I'm in a learning stage. We're all in a learning stage. We've never been down this road before. This is new for all of us, so it is a learning process for all of us as we go through learning about what it means to be able to have some of this stuff taking place for us. Now, I also want to go in, I want to talk a little more about the raids. I've written a couple different articles about the raids. I wrote an article about the reality check of the $38 raids, how realistic can they be? And then I turned around and wrote an article, and I did say, yeah, that was possible. Here's the bottom line on the raids. It's kind of like there's three different or scenarios that are out there that are for us. And it all comes down to who's going to pay the bill? Who's going to put up the trillions of dollars that it's going to take to pay for the reval, the currency exchange? When we walk into a bank with our dinar or dong and we exchange that, somebody's got to pay for that. That money's got to come from somewhere. It just doesn't come out of the blue air. Okay. So here's the three different probable or potential scenarios. Number one, there's a limited amount of money out there to be available. Now, first of all, I think this is fairly clear to understand. The country of Iraq, i.e. the central bank of Iraq, are the ones that release dinar to be purchased on the open market. When I mean the open market, purchased from the dealers, not through the foreign exchange open market. They are the ones who authorize how much dinar to be printed up and how much dinar to be released to be sold to people like you and me or whoever wants to buy the dinar. They watch that. They know that. So they know how much is out there. If there is a limited amount of money for that dinar, it means the value of the dinar will go down as the more dinar is sold. So the more people that come in and buy dinar, what the exchange rate is going to be is going to go down in value. It's possible if there's a limited amount of fund out there to who's going to foot the bill, we may see a dinar at 10 cents, 50 cents, 80 cents, or a dollar. That is possible. The second scenario, when I came into this, the very first question I asked is, well, who's going to foot the bill? And it was explained to me, and it was what I wrote in my original article on Who Wants to Be a Millionaire, and it was the oil credit scenario with China. And how it was explained to me is that China was going to put up the trillions of dollars because China has trillions of dollars in U.S. bonds that they have been purchasing over the last couple of decades. They are, for those of us in the United States, China is our biggest debtor. We owe more money to them than anybody else. And China was going to use it. That meant that there was trillions of dollars out there that was available, and that meant that the rate between somewhere between 340 and 390 could be a very realistic rate because that money would be there to back it up. And then the third source is the story of the Dragon family in China, who have been what I call the guardians of the gold that's been collected over millenniums of time. I touch on it in a couple of my YouTube videos. I touch on it in some of the articles. The best thing that you can do is go to the blog site of David Wilcock. David Wilcock. And he has a PDF book called The Financial Tyranny. And he talks about the history of this gold being collected by the Dragon family, that this is a really very real family. They have been kept hidden. The Illuminati, if that's the cabal, who we want to call them, they don't want that out because they know if the Dragon family gold gets out, it's game over for them because they've been controlling the world's money supply basically for centuries, and they would no longer have control of that. If the Dragon family wants to put up the gold, the trillions and trillions and trillions of dollars of gold to back up the dinar exchange, the dong exchange, and yeah, there could be a $38 rate. So any three of those are possible, but it all comes down to who's going to foot the bill and how much is available. There's no free lunch, folks. Somebody's paying for this, okay? What you notice is the bloggers don't talk about that. When you start talking about the rates are high, then I would love to come back and say, okay, but who's paying for the lunch? Who's footing the bill? Who's going to pay for these high rates? You see, they just report what they're told is what they have a tendency to do. Let me do this really quick. Somebody on the chat room, Bob, thank you very much, had wrote that David Wilcox's site is divinecosmos.com. D-I-V-N-E-C-O-S-M-O-S, divinecosmos, all one word, .com. You can go in there and you can, you can read that. His book on financial tyranny is excellent. Now, and you've heard me say, why do I believe in the reality of the Dragon family? Because I've had a personal encounter. I've met with a person who has met with them. I do not have the liberty to give that person's name out. But there was a point in time that I met with this person in the lobby of a bank because they were going to help fund some other projects that I was working on. And I noticed he had this briefcase, and he kept it very, very close to himself. And we were having this conversation, and it was myself and some others that were there. He reached into his briefcase and pulled out a $30 million Federal Reserve bond. And I held that in my hand, and I looked at it. And that's when I realized, this is for real. He didn't even know anything about David Wilcox's history of the Dragon family. And you will find you will get that not only from the information from David Wilcox. There's another guy by the name of Ben Fulford. Ben, F-U-L-F-O-R-D. Ben used to be the senior editor for Forbes, the Asian Bureau of Forbes magazine. And because of that, Ben has financial contacts all around the world. And he has turned into a whistleblower. Now, and Ben doesn't even come anywhere from what I would call the esoteric or metaphysical channeled messages or any of that kind of stuff. Ben's everyday, practical, down to the world, living in a physical world whistleblower. And he talks about the Dragon family because he's met with them. He calls them the White Hats, the White Dragons. That's who Ben refers to them as. And then if you read the post that comes out once a week, it's called the Poof Post, Poofness, and it's with Zap and Susan. They have met with the Dragon family multiple times. And I've had a phone conversation with a gentleman who has met with them 7 times. So I believe they're out there and they're real. And a lot of the people are saying they're the ones who are going to foot the bill for all of this. And so it comes down to the question is, what are they willing to release? And then that comes down to one other issue. Are we ready? Are we ready to become multimillionaires? I was talking with a gentleman on the phone earlier in the week, and I'm not going to say how much, but let's just say he had a lot of dinar. He started doing this 8 years ago, purchasing dinar 8 years ago. He has a lot of dinar. And he said, Dave, at $38, I would be worth more than a lot of the Fortune 500 companies here in the United States. Just me, one person. And I know there are tens of thousands, if not hundreds of thousands of people out there that have more than I do or just as much as I do. And he says, I'm going to give you a huge ballpark figure because I don't want him, I don't want to, kind of expose him. But he said he was going to have somewhere in the area between $400 million to $700 million. And he says, I don't know what to do with that kind of money. It kind of scares me. And are we ready for literally hundreds of thousands of us to have $50 to $100 million at that rate? I don't think we are. How would we handle that? What would we do with it? What would it create? The reality is, for the most of us, we don't know how to handle that much wealth. Most of us can handle $1 million, $3 million, $5 million. We can think that through in our minds, what we would do with that much money, how we would use it, what we would use for ourselves, what we would give away to our families, what we would set aside for our own retirement, what we would give to charity. We can think that through. But when you start getting up to 20, 30, 50, 100 million, know how to think that through very well, because that's the type of money that people who have that money have earned it through their businesses, and they weren't given that money overnight. they earned that money over a process and a period of time, and they learned how to handle that much wealth. Bill Gates didn't become the multimillionaire overnight. Now, he did when Microsoft went public with its stock, but he didn't have that much money to spend. Bill Gates still, for the first 10 to 15 years, was a workaholic at Microsoft and didn't even think about the money. When I lived in the Seattle area, I had the opportunity to develop a first-name acquaintance with his dad. And, you know, Bill Gates Sr., and I had talked with him, and he just says, Bill doesn't even think about his money. There's many times Bill wished he was not the wealthiest man in the world because it just becomes a distraction to what his real love is and his real passion is. Now his love and passion is running the Gates Foundation and giving the money away. And you heard some of the things I had said about that in the last couple of weeks. You know, he formed what was called this new billionaire club with billionaire philanthropists. He's committed to giving away 99% of his money. And Warren Buffett is right there along with it, with him, the second wealthiest man. And Buffett's going to give away 95% of his money. You see, so you can see what where these people are coming from, but they didn't get there overnight. There's a learning curve and a learning process for us learning how to be millionaires, how to have this much money. Now, if I was to make a call today, this is what I think. And again, folks, this is just my opinion. I can't, you know, it's that, you know, and again, $1 or $2 will get you a cup of coffee. You know, it's, you know, we used to say a dime gets you a cup of coffee. They don't have it anymore. But if I was to ask how I see it today, this is how I would see it. I don't think we're going to get the higher rates that they talk about. Because we as a collective who are brand new to this really aren't quite ready to handle that much wealth. I can realistically see a rate in that 340 to that 390 range. I can see that being very realistic. That takes care of us as individuals. It takes care of us as the places we would want to give our money to the various causes that we would support, and there would be enough of us to do that. And then I think the Dragon family is going to release the other trillions and trillions of dollars to projects, not to individuals. And it's going to get released there. Because if they give it to the individuals, then it doesn't really get to the purpose of what they really want, and that's to change this world. They feel that they are the guardians of this new age that we are moving into to release us from an economic slavery and to not just make us become wealthy, but to change this world, all around the world. That means helping people, countries in utter poverty, just have running water, food, adequate shelter, and having an adequate infrastructure where they can live their lives to a decent standard as what we get to live here in the United States and the rest of the Western world. Now, we're talking close to 60% of the world's population that still lives on less than $2 a day. It's bringing those people up to a higher standard. It's cleaning up the environment, cleaning up this earth, the degradation that we've done to the earth. It's helping to raise a higher standard of living so that we will be at peace with each other all around the world. It's about bringing third world countries and countries that are emerging countries into a higher standard of living so there's economic equality all around the world. When we have equality, we have peace. When we have equality, we have stability. When you have equality, you don't have things to be fearful. Equality, crime goes down. And the list just goes on and on and on. Most of the problems in our world, are created by economic equality, where you have a very small percent that basically dominated hoard, you know, 25-30% of the world's wealth while the rest of the people live in poverty. That's what creates a lot of the problems that we have. Is because people feel inadequate and they live on a survival basis. And they create sometimes wars because somebody has to be more powerful, more popular, more in control than somebody else. They can't let somebody else be better than them. So that's the stuff that goes on. And so are we as a mass, as a collective of, you know, 5 million people. And I've heard some people say it's as high as 20 million people here in the United States and around the world are holding to heart. Are we ready for that many of us to become that wealthy. In my opinion, no. Because we didn't earn it. We didn't learn how to do it. It's going to be put on us overnight. And we don't know how to handle that much wealth. I was talking with another lady this week for a foundation that we have here in Sedona. And we have some projects that we want to do. And we said, you know, we know what to do with about $15 to $20 million. And really, $10 million, we don't know what to do with $50 million. We haven't thought that through. We don't have plans for it. We don't know what we would do with $50 million. Most of it would sit until we were ready. And then all of a sudden now, for some of you, you start giving money to some of your most favorite charities. All of a sudden they become wealthy overnight. And are they ready? Are they ready to handle it responsibly? Many of you would give a lot of money to your church. Is your church ready to have a tenfold increase in its giving overnight? What does that do? All of a sudden, it gives room for the ego within us, the human ego, to go rampant about, oh my gosh, and it's for me, and it's not back to this paying it forward concept. It's not about what I call the circle of giving. That's something we all have to work through. Most of us can think through 1 million, 3 million, 5 million, 10 million. Maybe. I know here in Sedona, just the church that I attend, just because of the number of people in the church that have purchased dinar and the people that would tithe their 10%, that church would become the wealthiest church in Sedona overnight. I mean, it would have so much money, they wouldn't know what to do with it in conjunction with how they already operate. I mean, they would have this explosion of available money to do stuff with. And what do you do? You know, I mean, yes, they're very conscious with money. They would give a lot of it away. They would be helping things. You know, Penny, you know, who lives with me here in Sedona, and we already talked about the first thing we would do is, one of the things is take care of our own backyard. We would make sure the food banks and the shelters have plenty of money to do what they can do. There is what's called, you know, to me, the dignity of life issues, okay? The dignity of life issues. And that's about being able to have food, not be hungry, being able to have an adequate roof over your shoulder, know you always have a place to sleep. And they have food, and they have clothes. Food, clothing, and shelter are the three most common basic dignity of life issues. And we felt that it's our responsibility to take care of that in our community where we live, just as each of you would as well. So those are just some of the general topics that I've gone through here, and I just wanted to make some general comments. I'm going to go right in and go ahead and start taking some callers. And folks, if you want to talk, this is your opportunity to call 646-716-8069 and press the number 1. Because right now, I have a ton of people lined up here listening on the phone. I got a lot of people out there that are listening and that are listed on the chat room, but I only have one person that has said that they want to talk. And I'm going to go right to that caller, and I hope that you're ready because you've been on hold with me here from the very beginning, and it's area code 661. So area code 661, I'm coming in your way. There you are. Area code 661, you're on the air with me tonight. How are you? Are you there? Or have you been on hold for too long? I think you were on hold for too long. Okay. All right, so I'm going to go ahead and put that person back on hold again, and somebody else just came on. And I'm going to go now to area code 319. You were the first one to call in to have that opportunity. It's coming up, area code 319. You're on the air with me. How are you doing tonight?
I'm doing fine. How are you?
Great. How about, can you give us your name and where you're from?
I'm Sandy from Iowa.
Hi, Sandy. How are you?
I am doing fine. Not have anywhere near the kind of funds that you're saying some people have, but with what I would have, I want to see what I could do to help seniors and stuff. I think that those of us who might have $1, $2, $3, $4, $5 million, if we had as much as that, I think that they could come up with things to do like that, but I kind of agree with you as far as the lots and lots of money. I can't even visualize anybody having hundreds of millions of dollars. But maybe they could be the ones to go and start up the water projects in other countries that need water and places, apartments and stuff like that for, say, seniors or handicapped people or whatever.
You know, and it's true, Sandy. That's possible. But usually, see, here's what happens is most of those people, they have the money, and they don't necessarily have the networking with the organizations that do that. And then all of a sudden, you get a whole lot of people that are reinventing the wheel all at the same time. Instead of working it through somebody else that already has the experience, they've already built the wheel, they just need some money. And they don't know who they are. And when you have that much money, all of a sudden people are going to say, what am I going to do with it? Where am I going to give it away? It's back to what Warren Buffett had said. Warren Buffett says, I have over $50 billion to give away. I am not an expert at running a foundation to do good projects. So he's just giving his money, Gates Foundation. He said, why should I do it when there's somebody else that is really good at it and let them do it? And it's kind of an illustration that we could run into that problem ourselves. People may want to go out and buy their own, you know, apartment complexes here and that and says, okay, seniors, come on in here. But they don't have practical experience of how to run the operation. And then what happens is the money goes to waste because they don't know what they're doing. Where if there was money given to projects directly from the Dragon family, and it's like a grant that you could apply for, those applications are going to come from people who probably know what they're doing because they have a vision and they have a passion for what they're doing. They believe in what they're doing. They say, I really want to do this. I just need some more. Does that sound practical?
Okay, and it sounds practical, but it also leaves out a lot of people that do have some practical experience that would know what they were doing. They got left out because they were lumped in the pile of they don't know what they're doing.
Well, but if I'm understanding you, is that those are the ones who can start applying for the grants and that the money would be available for them to do their projects. That's how it's been explained to me for the Dragon family. It's what the Zap and Susan Post talk about is what's called the prosperity programs. They already have a list of people.
I have sent that list out. I have sent that information out to several people to get on that list to do things.
Right, right. See,
and I'm aware of that.
Right. See, and it's through stuff like that that they make applications for projects for the money to be released. And because, you know, you and me personally, there's only so much money we need. We don't need $50 million to live on. You know.
No, I would be happy with three or four or five even.
I know.
We'll be more than happy.
Most of us are very comfortable with that because we're not accustomed to that lifestyle, and that is something that's going to be coming to us, you know, overnight. So, and
well,
folks, when I say Gates Foundation, I'm not saying they're the best foundation in the world, but they are what is out there now that is giving more money away than anybody else. They're the biggest philanthropist foundation in the world. I'm just using that as an illustration. They
right.
do things I don't
but
agree with.
I still think that you're overlooking what the little guy can do.
Oh, absolutely. I think that, you know, the little guy has the ability. It's not always money. It's their heart, their passion. You know, sometimes they may be you may have somebody that didn't buy any dinar, but they're an expert, very passionate about carrying out a project. And it's just marrying those up. And, you know,
for
so
me, my idea would be to buy some land, and I would go more for mobile homes because
mm-hmm.
you can get the more updated and less money involved, and have it available so that family members who might need it could be on the property if they wanted to, but in the event that they didn't want to. My idea would be originally when buying the property to have X number of spots available on there for such, landscape it like a regular neighborhood,
mm-hmm.
and offer it for seniors who might happen to have a mobile home and need a place to put it to live out their days.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's a great
idea.
That
would be something that they could do. And then, but my idea would be through some of the things that I've read, your stuff and other people's stuff, would be to have the lawyers and the planners and the construction people. And I want to have it where there's it's pretty much self-sufficient. I want to have the solar panels for electricity, and I want to do the own wells on the property and things like that. And so this, in the process of doing all this, you've got to hire people to come in and do stuff. You're providing jobs for other people.
Sure. Before and, that, you got to find a place that's going to allow you the zoning to do it. You know, I mean, you know, communities aren't allowing the building of mobile home parks like they used to. You don't find hardly any new mobile home parks anymore.
But if you buy land that's like out part of in the countryside, you know, you have
it has to be. You can't just go build something like that out in the countryside. You'd have to have the appropriate
zoning. Right, you've got to get your paperwork
right.
and stuff in line too.
Yeah,
just like you know, all
and
of that.
That's not a very simple thing to do, because you have to allow your governmental jurisdiction to approve basically building a brand new community out in the middle of nowhere.
Well, that's like saying. Don't spend the money for at least a year. Well, during that year, you can get all your ducks in a row, as my daughter puts it. Get your ducks in a row.
That'd probably take
and
you
have
like
your
five
paperwork
to 10 years.
Done. Get your planning board done. Get your stuff done through the courthouses and things that has to be done. Line up the people that do the work for you, that dig the water wells and put in the solar panels and have all that stuff figured out in advance. If you don't try to go out and buy it all tomorrow, then you're going to be, you should do all right with it.
I hear what you're saying. Let me come back and say now I'm going to take what's called the practical position. See, what you described in most counties and states around the country couldn't be done in 1 year. It would take 5 to 10 years to build that.
Okay. But what I'm saying is don't try to do it tomorrow is my point.
Oh, sure.
Take that year or 2 years or 5 years or whatever it is.
Uh-huh. Yeah. See, that's the illustration. All of a sudden you have people who have a lot of money, but they don't have the experience. And they need to be married with people who have the experience so that it's used in a reasonable, rational manner, because all of a sudden you have this passion that, gee, I want to help all these people, but logistically there's still a way of how that has to get done. And it still has to work in the same context of what we have right now. Yeah, things will change because there's a lot more money available throughout, you know, the society and country as a whole. But you can't just go in and build a mobile home park overnight somewhere. You know, it's got to go through all of its normal, the process. But that does fill for something that is long term, see, as well. So, and
it's not only providing a place for people to live, but it's also providing jobs for people.
Sure, you bet. Absolutely. There will be so many jobs that will be created out of money expansion like this. See, and that's one of the reasons why the Dragon family in China doesn't want, or even the Chinese government is not looking at trying to take over and be better than the United States. They know and understand. See, China knows and understands. For them to do well, the United States has to do well, because we are a consumer-based economy country. And a lot of stuff that we buy is built in China. We are the ones with our money that's going to employ their people. And because it will take them a good 5, 10, 15, 20 years to go through the cycle to where they are sustainable for themselves. They just want to put their people to work and have their people have jobs, because they got, 1.2 billion people, whatever the population of the country is. And so they have a lot of economic problems that they're going to be facing. So they want us in the United States to have a lot of money, because we will, to have money to spend, because we will buy the things that they build. So they benefit from us doing well. And that's why they see this as a system of equality, not as a system of trying to be better or do better or be more powerful. That's how I see it. So, okay, anything else?
No, thank you.
Okay,
thanks
for calling tonight.
Being there, and thank you for having this.
You bet. Thanks a lot. Okay, great. Good night.
Bye. Good night.
Okay, going to go on to the next caller, and the next caller is area code 514. I'm coming out of the area code 514. Good evening. This is Dave. Who do I have on the line with me here?
Hi, Dave. Blair from Montreal. How are you?
Hey, Blair. I'm doing good. Where'd you say you're from again?
Montreal.
Oh, okay. Great. What's up tonight, Blair?
First of all, I want to thank you again for all the wonderful work that you do, Dave. It's absolutely wonderful, beautiful. Thank you.
My pleasure. What have you got?
Well, I was just listening to what you were just saying about how a lot of people will not know how to deal with all this wealth. And there are definitely going to be quite a few people who will not know how to handle dealing with large sum in the range of 20, 30, 40 million. But dare I say that there are quite a few people out there who have very good ideas but just lack the money to put these ideas into motion. And dare I say that when the time comes when they do have this kind of wealth, I think they will be surrounded by people who will help them realize these goals that they want to do. There's so much that needs to be done out there, Dave, that I am proof positive that when the time comes, I think that a lot of good things will come to pass with those individuals who have, you know, 50, 60, 70 million dollars. There is so much that can be done. And I think realistically that if you have a little bit more faith, I'm not saying that you don't, but I think if you have a little bit more faith, I think you'll see that people who do have those large amounts of money will be able to make drastic improvements in their community, whether it be creating a food bank, whether it be creating a clothing bank, whether it be providing services for disadvantaged families and getting furniture or getting their house repaired. There is so many things that can be done when you have that kind of wealth. There may be other people who may not have that kind of money that will make suggestions that otherwise would not have been suggested, seeing that they do have that kind of money to start all these wonderful, wonderful operations that will affect the communities, stateside and Canadian side as well.
I agree with you. I agree with you a lot on that. It's just my thought is it's important for all of us to sit down and have an idea or have a game plan of what we would do with our money, whether
Absolutely.
It's 1 million, 5 million, or even 50 million. Now, because you gave illustrations about, you know, creating food banks in your communities. Almost all communities already have food banks. They already have them. And I'm going to give an illustration of living here in Sedona. The greater Sedona area is about 20,000 people. That would be Sedona, the village of Oak Creek, and stuff like that. We already have a fantastic food bank that is here. And there are probably going to be, I'm just right off the top of my head, but I wouldn't be surprised if there's 300 to 600 people here in Sedona that are going to become overnight multimillionaires. I'm not talking millionaires. I'm talking, you know, if the $38 price comes in, there's going to be 500 people here in Sedona that are going to have over $10 million. That's just off the top of my head. Now, all of a sudden they all decide, let's say 30% of them decide to give money to the food bank. Well, all of a sudden now you have a food bank that has $5 million to $10 million. What's it going to do? How does it use that much money? Because a food bank in the size of a community of 20,000 people doesn't need that much money because there aren't that many people that are starving. Do you follow me?
Understood.
Or maybe, you see, it's not that it's not going to happen. Yes, it's going to happen. But it's one of those things is all of a sudden we all have this money to give and we want to give. And are we giving wisely? Sometimes you can give too much because the recipients don't need that much. And so then what happens? Your money sits and it doesn't go and it doesn't get put to work.
Understood.
It's one of those illustrations where at some point in time, I mean, I experienced this from my years being in politics. Everybody has their own idea of what they want to do, and they'll all go out and reinvent the wheel, and all of a sudden the wheel gets to be really crazy. Because there aren't coordinated efforts to make the wheel be productive. That's the point that I'm coming about. If all of a sudden we had people that had $30, $50 million, you could see a lot of unproductivity with a lot of money. Because everybody thinks that they're the one that wants to help this issue, whether it's the homeless shelter, whether it's the food bank, whether it's the senior center, whether it's the animal shelter, whatever it is. Because if you want to do it, there's probably another 5, 10, 20, 30 people in your community that want to do it as well. And all of a sudden, instead of giving away $20,000, they're going to give away $2 million. And then all of a sudden, you've got a food bank that has $30 and $40 million, and it just doesn't need that much money. What is it going to do with that much money? You see? I mean, what are you going to do, have steak dinners for everybody in town every night? And I'm saying that facetiously. You know,
I understand.
I'm so much facetious when I say that. It's about having it in a constructive manner and in a wise manner with how we use our money. But I think people are going to come out of the woodwork to give their money away. Our challenge.
I also believe that people will come out of the woodwork as well, Dave, with ideas so that people have, you know, viable means of, you know, channeling their money in different areas to help the community. I honestly, honestly believe that, for example, you say that maybe, you know, 10 people will donate to one cause, and in the end, you know, somewhere along the line, a light's going to go off. And they say, hey, wait a minute, why don't we diversify some of this money to do A, B, and C? And it's like, wow, I didn't think about that. I honestly believe that there's going to be opportunities. There's going to be ideas that are going to come out that people wouldn't have normally thought of. I honestly believe that's going to happen because there's no way that would have happened if the money wasn't there in the first. So I think it's going to create different sparks. I believe it's going to create people to think differently. It's going to create... it's going to create an energy wave that will get people thinking about how and where they should put their money. I honestly believe that, Dave.
Oh, I agree. I think it'll be fine. I think it'll be wonderful. There will be people that will be giving a lot of money overseas because they see it. It's easy to see the need and you want to help, but it's something different in how you get it done. How do you coordinate it logistically so that it actually gets done and gets to the need? It was interesting because, see, Bill Gates was quoted on that 60 Minutes program. He said he realized it wasn't about providing vaccinations for all of the third world countries around the world to the children that need it so that they don't get polio. He said the problem wasn't the money and being able to buy the vaccinations. The problem was logistically getting it to the people in communities where there are no roads, no running water, no housing, no coordinated community government was the greatest problem. The greatest problem was the logistics. They talked about, we have a problem, we want to solve it, and the example was getting polio shots to all of the children all around the world, and they had money to do it. But the biggest problem wasn't the money. The problem
was no infrastructure.
The infrastructure to get it done, because they didn't have infrastructure in place to deliver the service. We take that for granted in the United States. So you see, some of these places or these countries where these people live on $2 a day, it isn't going to change overnight. And so what I could see is one of the problems is also everybody wants to, again, invent the wheel when it's not the wheel isn't the problem. The problem is getting the wheel to the location to where it can do its work. See, so,
I'm going to play devil's advocate. I definitely understand what you're saying.
Sure.
Perhaps, just perhaps, that because the infrastructure wasn't there to get the medicines or the food to the people who really need it in perhaps remote areas where there is no infrastructure, well, hey, build it. Start it. Maybe
I know.
That is the message. Okay.
Okay.
They need
let me
food.
Come
they
back.
Need
let
shots,
me come back and
no
say infrastructure. I'm sorry, go ahead.
Pardon me?
You were saying build it, construct it. But you're going into third world countries where people don't even know how to read and write and don't even have building skills. There isn't a labor force there to do it.
No,
you
I understand
see, it's
that.
It's one
that,
of those things
that,
that
be,
we take for granted.
It would be
we take
a
for
monumental
granted that we have a labor
task.
Force. Yeah.
It would be a monumental task, understood, but it has to start somewhere. That's my point.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely.
If there is no road, Dave, if there's no road to bring, you know, the goods, the food, the medicines, well, you know what? If you have the money, bring in the machinery. You know, bring it over by boat. Bring in the people that you need. If you have the money and you're serious about this, bring in the infrastructure. Okay, the food and the medicine may not get there within a month or 2 months or 3 months, but you know that 6 months down the road, you know that you're going to have 18-wheeler trucks rolling into these communities because it took you that long to build the infrastructure.
Yeah, yeah. No, I get it. I hear what you're saying. The point that I'm trying to make is to be wise about where do we want to give our money. And have a well-thought-out plan. What is it that you want to do with your money? And to think it through and realize you may not be the only one, and is it better to join with someone else to do it collectively? Because, see, what it does, it brings us back to the whole aspect of building community. We aren't islands by ourselves. It isn't about just me feeling good for me and giving my money away. It's about me doing it with someone else. Because someone else may do it better than I do. Someone else may have a better idea than what I have. And someone else may have the expertise of how to logistically get it done that I don't have. And so it's partnering with people. And then that is a massive project in itself of just finding the right people to partner with.
Understood.
I come back to the Gates Foundation. Again, do I agree with everything that they do? No. And why? I'm very knowledgeable about the Gates Foundation. I almost went to work for them 5 years ago. Okay. They didn't build their foundation overnight. They have literally over 1,000 people that work at their foundation. They didn't build that foundation overnight. They sat down. They had a well-coordinated, well-thought-out game plan of what they wanted to do and how they wanted to do it. And as they continued to grow to meet their objectives, they were able to bring in very well-qualified people, sometimes the best people in the world, and they paid them very well to accomplish something because these were the people that knew how to do it because they had experience in it. And so sometimes that's going to be part of our everyday logistical practical problems. All of a sudden we've got money, but we can't find people to do what we want to do.
We're definitely going to need to go through a learning curve, Dave.
Absolutely.
That is for sure.
No, there's a huge learning curve to this whole thing. And it's learning how to be wise stewards of our money. And mm-hmm. that's why I said the very, very first thing is that you could do, all of us could do, before the reval even happens, is to sit down and write out a game plan. What would you do with your money?
Absolutely.
How much are you going to use for yourself? What is it that you want to buy for yourself? And then what are you going to do to give away to your immediate family? What are you going to put into trust? What are you going to set aside for yourself for a retirement account? And then where do you want to give it away?
I understand.
And how far does that go? And how much are you going to give? And are they ready for it? And are you going to run into some obstacles? Or are you going to run into that they may be getting too much? Because all of a sudden, and I'm just using my simple little community of Sedona, that all of a sudden, you know, 100 people decide they want to give money to the food bank. And the food bank just becomes, you know, washed with money where they can be doing steak dinners for everybody in the community every night if they wanted to, you know.
Understood.
Okay.
Just very quickly, because I know there may be other callers waiting.
Sure.
I think I'm not going to go into detail about myself, but suffice it to say that since I got involved with the dinar and more with the dong, I have spent, I kid you not, I must have spent on upwards of at least, I would say, a good 100 hours planning on what I'm going to do, planning who do I need to hire, what expertise do I need to make this happen. I have obviously spoken to many, many, many people, thanks to your Who Wants to Be a Millionaire newsletter, and I've asked these individuals, said, have you written out your plans? And unfortunately, most of these people turn on and said, you know what, Blair, I haven't written down anything. And I tell them, I said, it is very important that you take the time and sit down and plan out what you want to do. Because when the money actually hits you, you're going to be, oh, God, what do I do? And, you know, they say, Blair, I'm going to call you. And it's like, you can call me. I can give you advice. But ultimately, you need to sit down and plan this out. Plan on, as you said, plan how much you need for yourself. Take care of your backyard. How much are you going to give to family? How much are you going to give to friends? Once you've got that nailed down, start planning on how you want to, you know, give back to the community, give back to society. Sit down and plan it out. Now, unfortunately, most people have a hard time thinking in those terms because they never had
to. They do.
So I understand that. But I try to talk to my friend and say, look, have an idea. Work with it. You know what? Google is a great search tool. If you have an idea, go to Google and Google it. Do a lot of reading. Do some research. I've had a few people do that, but not everyone is going to do that.
Mm-hmm. You know, Blair, thank you. Thank you. Because you're one of the exceptions. You already have a plan of what you would do with the money. And we come back to that biblical principle, to whom much is given, much is required. We are about being ready to be given much. Much is required of us in return to be responsible with that. And I think, you know, it is funny because, you know, I hadn't been spending that much time thinking about that. But, you know, it's coming up tonight. You brought it up. And it's about, have we sat down and planned what we're going to do with it? And maybe that sometimes that can be one of the reasons why it's not coming forth, because we're not ready to receive it.
Exactly.
We're not, you know, it's like when you are in a job and you're learning a new skill and you're growing in your job, your boss or your supervisor says, are you ready for a promotion? Are you ready to handle the responsibility that comes with the promotion? And sometimes we haven't even thought about it. We haven't thought about a new job, a new promotion, a new responsibility. We haven't taken the time to prepare ourselves for that. And and that's what this is. It's like the vision of the faith, the vision of believing becomes a reality to you when you begin to think it through and work it out of how would I do this. And it's like it finds you when you're ready for it. There's an old saying that says when the student is ready, the teacher appears.
Yes.
The teacher shows up for the student when the student is ready to learn. You see, I think the money will show up for us when we're ready to use it. And I think that's the kind of turning into one of the themes tonight, is for us to be ready to use the money that comes to us, to have a plan, to have a game plan.
Absolutely.
Now, it's your game plan. You can be flexible with it. I'm not here to tell you what to do, but just be consciously aware of what would you do if all of a sudden you had $5 million.
Mm-hmm.
What
mm-hmm.
would you do with it?
See? Absolutely. Dave, I'm going to thank you.
I have a game plan. I have a game plan if it comes in at 50 cents. I have a game plan if it comes in at $3.50 to $4. I have a game plan if it comes in at $38. I have a game plan for all of us. I already know what I'm going to do with my money.
Mm-hmm.
And where I'm going to put it, how I'm going to distribute it, what I'm going to do for myself. And where I'm going to initially, in the very beginning, to give the early money that's going to be given away. I already know. So, yeah. Okay?
Good. Dave, thank you very much again for your time.
Yeah.
And I definitely look forward to making a difference.
Thanks, Blair. You brought up a really good discussion tonight that was good for all the people that are going to listen to this, and I just want to say thank you very much. And so, okay, well, I'll let you go for now. Okay, Blair, thanks. Yeah.
Thank you. My pleasure. And
okay, good night. Yeah. And folks, I just want to say that for all of you. You know, it's you sometimes, the folks that call in, that really, you know, help. You help me come up with ideas throughout the night, especially when we have an open forum discussion, because I don't always know where it's going to go. I kind of let it go as where the callers come in. And I think tonight Blair's comments were really, really helpful. Okay, I'm going to go to the next caller. I've got the next caller, area code 514. Area code 514. I hope you're ready to come on the line here. And okay, there you are. You're on the line now. Area code 514. You're on with Dave. How are you tonight? Hello. Are you there? Area code 514 is not there. I'm going to go ahead and put them back on hold and go to the next one. And I'm coming to the next one. It's area code 480. Area code is 480. I'm coming onto the air with you now. You're there. Area code 480. How are you?
Hello?
Hey, there we are. Hey, you're on the air with me here. What's your name? Where are you from?
Yeah, hi, Dave. My name's Roy. I'm from Phoenix.
Okay. How are you doing, Ryan?
I'm doing great. I just have a quick question.
What can I help you with? Sure.
When it does happen and why, we've already started to interview different people and we have an idea of the team we're going to build and who we're going to use to help us safeguard the money and handle it properly. But where do you put the money? What type of vehicle do you put it in to hold it to keep it safe? Because you're only technically insured at any institution $250,000 per Social Security number. So $500,000
okay.
Between a wife and a husband, and that's
it.
That's
a really good question, Ryan. And what I'm going to share is just my opinion. Everybody needs to do what's good for them. Now, here's what I have been sharing with people as they've been asking the questions and I've been responding back through email. When you have a large sum of money, it's not a bad idea to have more than one bank to put it in and even multiple bank accounts to put it in. I have 3 bank accounts and 2 brokerage accounts where I'm going to place my money. Initially, it will all go into an LLC business account that I have, and then it gets parceled out from there to my other places. Secondly, question you brought up about the $250,000 of bank insurance. Let me say this. That is not something that's really that big of an issue. Now, having said that, that brings up a lot of, you got to be kidding me, you know, when I say that. And here's why. It's the Federal Deposit Insurance Corporation that is going to pay the $250,000. When we went through the real estate crisis back in 2008, and there were only about 35 banks around the country that went under, they didn't even have enough money to cover those 35 banks. And the vast majority of them were all small regional banks. For you to be concerned about your $250,000, you need to be concerned about that if you are in a bank that is just not financially stable and as an independent bank could go under. If the whole financial system goes under, there isn't going to be enough money to cover everybody's insurance. We're all down the tube. The other thing is, the positive side is, remember, there are the 4 big banks and they're all being called too big to fail. They won't let them go under. So it's not about your individual account going under to have the $250,000 concerned about. It's about your individual bank in contrast to all the others doing well. That's when you should be concerned about your insurance on your money. Outside of that, it's just not that practical, because if you put your money into a large regional bank or one of the big 4 banks, if they go under, everybody's going under. And at that point
right.
in time, insurance doesn't mean anything because there isn't enough insurance. It's like any insurance company doesn't have the ability to handle all of their policyholders going under at the same time. It's because there's an individual accident, or that house had an accident, or there's a storm in one place in the country, and all of a sudden they've got maybe 100 or 200 claims, but yet they have 100,000 customers. You see, if you're an insurance company that's got 100,000 customers, and all of a sudden 10,000 of them need claims all at the same time, you don't have the money to cover it. So that makes sense.
Right.
So, but here's
yeah.
what I do also. Here's the other thing that I do. The majority of my money is not going in the bank accounts. It's going into my brokerage accounts. Brokerage accounts are set up and established to handle large sums of money. People who are very wealthy, they're already multimillionaires, the majority of their money is in their stock portfolios, brokerage accounts. That's where they keep the majority of their money. See, and that's what I am going to do. Those brokerage accounts are established to do that. Now, here's what you can do. You already have your main bank. It's not a bad idea to go open an account at a second bank. And then when the money comes, what you really want to do is you want to start establishing relationships with the banks, what they call them wealth managers. If you go into a bank with $1 million, they are going to assign a wealth manager to you. That's a good starting point if you don't already have somebody like that, because that person is going to be there to serve you. And it's in their personal, that wealth manager, it's in their personal interest to keep you as a customer in their bank, because they make a bonus based on how much money they have in their bank. And the reason you want a second bank is you want a second opinion. It's just like going to a doctor and having a second opinion. You want to be able to learn from them. Let them help you. And let them start. And the other thing is, let's say you don't have a good CPA. Well, you know what? Your wealth manager is going to have those networks. Your wealth manager is going to be able to tell you, this is a good CPA here in town. This person has been here for this long. They're really good at what they do. They'll refer you to somebody. When you start having that much money, it's about building relationships with people who are professionals in the field to help you navigate through learning how to be a millionaire. Does that make sense?
Okay. Oh, yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Good.
We've heard different things, too, about possibly using Lloyd's of London and stuff like that. And you know, I stop and think, well, what do people that have a lot of money do now? So,
yes. I mean, Ryan, you hit it right on the nose. What do current millionaires do? You know, it amazes me with some of the stuff that these people on the blog sites are saying, you got to have this, you got to do that, you got to do this, you got to do that. And all these things are based in fear that the bank is going to steal your money, or the government's going to steal your money, or somebody else is going to steal your money. You know, current millionaires, if they make another $1 million, they don't go getting a new phone number, a new email, and a new computer. They don't do that stuff. They're very confident in what they have now and feeling secure with what they have. Most of those things are based in fear because you don't know how to handle the money. You don't know how to handle the wealth. And I say, are they doing now? You see, I'm not going to change my computer. I'm not going to change my email, and I'm not going to change my phone. I might change my passwords. I might do that. But I'm really not going to do any of that stuff, because I'm going to have it in places where I feel it's going to be secure, and I don't want to have to worry about that. You know, I was at a restaurant today, and I used a debit card to pay for it. And the thought crossed my mind is, you know, sometimes you hear the stories about how waiters and others at restaurants can get the information off your debit credit card and can suck the money out of your account. Well, you know what I realized? Well, if I just use my debit card all the time, and if I don't ever have more than $1,000 in there, then I'm not going to lose anything if they do that to me. You see, it's learning how to move your money around, keep yourself protected, keep yourself safe without being fearful about it, without having to do a bunch of stupid stuff, you know, because wealthy people don't do that today. What they have is multiple checking accounts with debit cards on each of those. They know where to put their large sums of money, and they know who to ask for help with how to do that. And the best place to start is the wealth manager at the bank where you're going to put your money, if you don't have anybody already. Yeah. So develop a relationship with that person. Then if you're not comfortable with that person, that's why you want a second bank or a third bank where you can go and work with them. And you want to have spread the money around so you build relationships with somebody that you find you are comfortable with and you trust them. And that's what helped navigate you through the early stages of this. So.
Sounds good. Thank you very much.
Good. Thanks.
Thank you.
All right. Okay, thanks a lot.
Bye.
Okay, I'm going on to a new number. it says 011 and then 661. Maybe I, you know, whatever. Here we are. I'm just going to bring you on the air. Hi, you're on the air with Dave. Can you hear me? Hello? Hello? No?
Hello?
Yes, there we are. Okay. Hi, you're on the air. What's your name?
Well,
where are you
Dave.
From? Yes.
Wow. Finally. Well, I mean, anyway, how are you, Dave?
I'm doing good. Say, Riley, is that your name?
No, Byron's my name.
Oh, Byron. Good. How you doing tonight, Byron?
Yeah. I'm doing great. I'm just working on being patient. When I phoned in, the moment you came on, the second you came on, I was told I was the first caller in the queue. And I said, it's great. Anyway, I don't want to take a lot of time because I bet you there's at least 200 to 300 people waiting because since I was told I was the first one and it's been, what are we into, about an hour in now? Almost, now in 10 minutes. Anyway. I'm not going to
I
go
only
on
have
about that.
Another four people lined up, so but go right ahead.
Okay, just quickly, if this thing goes to, you know, I'm with the BND, and I've purchased enough. I've had a vision from a while back when I first got into this about who I'd like to help out besides personal people. The indigenous groups in Canada and even in the States, no water, no education, fracking going on, animal welfare groups, disaster relief, medical care for millions, shelters. And I've heard everything you said. You've talked about food banks and all that stuff. But there's I could find a way to put this after, you know, doing some serious research, one-on-one conversations with people who would be perhaps receiving what I want to give, and it's all about paying it forward. I want to just say, you've probably been asked this question, but people who've even a couple people asked me today who have bought some, by the way, said, so there's going to be a lot of people in Vietnam who are going to be millionaires or being very wealthy, given that it's one of the poorest countries out there and they make next to nothing. What do you say to people who say to you, Dave, so there's going to be a lot of wealthy people in Vietnam?
There's not.
Yeah,
it's
how is that going to work?
Because remember,
how's that going to work?
The people in Vietnam don't have money to buy a lot of dong like you and I do.
Yes.
The people in
right.
Vietnam is a country that they live on less than $2 a day.
Yes.
And see, anything that they bring in has to go for basic survival needs. There aren't
yes.
a lot of people in Vietnam that are going to be wealthy overnight because they don't have dong to buy. They don't have money to buy dong. Any dong they have in their country is basically for survival needs of food, shelter, and clothing. They
yeah,
work 14 and 16
too.
Hours a day and only make $2.
I know.
We assume that they make the same amount of money and have what's called discretionary capital to go and buy a million dong. They don't have money to buy a million dong. They'd be lucky if they have 5,000 or even 1,000.
So would they be having to buy this with American dollars? A day? I mean, their currency
they probably would.
Dong.
They can't go out and buy more dong with their currency. See, a dong is good inside the country of Vietnam. Outside the country of Vietnam, it's worthless. It isn't worth hardly anything. That's why $50 will get you a million dong. It sounds like a lot of money to us. But they don't have that kind of money to buy that much. Now, what will happen is the country, the government, will get a lot of money. The government will have the ability to explode overnight for their various projects and to help develop the country because money will come into the coffers of the businesses and the government. That's different than individuals becoming millionaires overnight because they won't. And will there be possibly some still corruption? Yeah, there might be. You know, corruption is not going to go away.
Will this reval help? Will it help their situation or the regular Vietnamese population at all, or
oh,
not?
Absolutely, absolutely.
Yeah.
See, here's why. You see, because a dong is basically worthless outside of the country of Vietnam, it means
mm-hmm.
it's only good inside country. Their money really only works for something that is produced within their own country.
Right.
It's extremely expensive, almost exorbitantly expensive to import anything into the country because the exchange rate is so bad. They basically can't import anything. Now,
right.
when the currency explodes overnight and gets revalued overnight, Now, all of a sudden, they can start purchasing things to import to rebuild their infrastructure, to rebuild
right.
their country, to provide services, because they can now purchase stuff from overseas or outside of the country where they couldn't before. It's the same way in Iraq. See?
Right.
Iraq
so
the person yeah.
Sorry, Dave, the person on the street, the average person who's very poor, when I said to you, will it help them? And you said, well, yeah, but it's more that the people who have the money to buy this equipment, to bring infrastructure in and stuff, it'll be more of a pay raise for the laborers and just the common people, which would make them their lives a little bit better?
I'm only talking hypothetically, because remember, Vietnam is still a communist country.
Yes.
It's still a communist country. And I'm only talking hypothetically when I say that. Hypothetically, what will happen is there will be a lot of money country, most likely through the government coffers, and they could end up doing what Iraq is doing, and they issue a debit card to all the people, and it becomes kind of similar to our food stamp cards. You have X amount of dollars on it that is going to be given to you each month for you to go and spend to take care of yourself and improve your living conditions. And they may do that. They may do something like that because there will be money to give to the people. All of a sudden, health care will become available and probably be free. Transportation will explode. The ability to rebuild their infrastructure, the ability to have adequate education for their people. See, they will now have money to do those types of things. But they have to rebuild their infrastructure. So many of these countries, we take it for granted. We have stuff we just take for granted that they don't even have, and they have to start all over again from scratch. But it is about, will they see a huge explosion in the improvement of their living conditions or the availability of it? Yes. Yes, they very likely will. Could there still be corruption in their government leaders? Yes, but you know what? They'll have so much money, the government leaders will have so much to do with that they won't want to be corrupt. Now, they may still be corrupt. They may keep a large portion of it for themselves in contrast to the everyday people, but there's going to be so much that the people will benefit from.
Yeah, and given the fact that this is happening with, you know, in light of Saint Germain and Archangel Michael and what's going on, I would think that, and because the consciousness is changing, the light is hitting the planet really hard right now, and I think that those of us who are privileged for a reason, because we are pay it forwarders. At least I know I am, and that's what my vision was, and that's why I put as much money as I could in. Which brings me to this. Have you any idea, other than knocking off the four zeros off the dong, that it could maybe, and even if it's 20 cents, I'd be happy, happy as get out, even if it's at 20 cents, because you knock the four zeros off, and that's what you get, right? So, anything beyond that is super gravy, right? But could be just 20 cents.
I have no
idea. Yeah,
right on. What's different about the dong is we just don't get any intel. But this is what I tell people. See, the dinar can revalue all on its own. The dong is dependent upon the global currency reset. Now, if you would have asked me 4 to 5 months ago, were they both going to happen at the same time, I would have said yes. I really thought they were. If you ask me today, I think there's a higher probability that the dinar may revalue before the global currency reset takes place. Do I have solid intel on that? No, I don't. It's all hypothetical. It's all speculation. But you could see the dinar go. Because, see, the dinar revaluing is based upon what happened at the United Nations. When the United Nations took actions and voted Iraq out of Chapter 7 into Chapter 6 status, they took actions for a single country. And this single country is now ready to bring its currency back onto the global marketplace. Vietnam's currency is already on the foreign exchange. That's why you can go down to a bank and you can purchase dong, but you can't purchase dinar because dinar is not traded on the open market. And so the dinar revaluing brings it onto the open market where Vietnam is already located. So Vietnam has to go through the global currency reset. And that's a different animal. It's a totally different situation. And they may not both happen at the same time.
I was thinking it would have to happen almost at the same time because it would be double dipping for people to cash in their dinar, make a fortune, and then buy a, you know, like a just a, you know, a heck of a lot of dong with that money.
That is true, but that then assumes that Vietnam is going to let all of that dong out to be purchased. That you could have a scenario the dinar revalues. And then the three other currencies that are way out of balance, the Vietnamese dong, the Indonesian rupiah, and the rupee, and the Zimbabwe dollar, they could freeze those.
Yeah, I got you. I see.
You could all of a sudden have the International Monetary Fund says, we are going to freeze those currencies. If you're going to purchase them, they could say they will limit how much you could purchase so that it's only an amount that is usable or if you're going to travel to the country. Or they may say the only place you can purchase those currencies is in-country, which means then it's still a viable currency if you're going to travel there. But it's not an investment currency. They could shut that down.
Wow.
And then that stops the double dipping.
Right on. Okay.
So,
I don't want to take it much more time. I appreciate the fact there's other callers. I just want to mention one thing. We're aware of Mountain Goat. We're aware of Zap. And I'm tuned into, you know, basically their stuff. I mean, there's a lot of other dribble that's out, as you know, on the various sites. But, you know, the Mountain Goat seems to be very, very viable, as is Zap. And they're seem to be closing in on this week. And I wouldn't put a nickel on it, but I'm open to, or they're definitely receptive to the possibility. What's your take on these? Like, she got woken up in the morning from a call and said, "This is a rare thing for me for this to happen."
Yeah, I put her into the camp that she's responsible and reliable in what she writes, and she's realistic. And she doesn't play the game. Of the hype, tonight, you know, and I mean, even today, Tony, again, says, I'm 100% certain it's going to happen. I'm just really feeling it inside. You know, he's been saying for months.
Yeah.
When Mountain Goat comes back and says, she even came out and says, there was one time that she said, don't expect it for another 3 to 4 weeks. Because she knew there were specific things that logistically had to get done and they weren't done and it wasn't going to happen until then. And at that time, you know, Tony and Oki and Blue Wolf and Logan were all saying tonight. You know, they were all saying tonight. And she's saying, no, it's not going to happen tonight. And she has consistently said, nobody knows the dates and the rates.
I know. And from the get-go, when I first heard her read her, and I've been listening to Zap on Gaia Portal for God knows how long, you just know right away that they're the two top dogs, right?
They are.
You know,
info. And they operate with integrity.
Yes.
They don't play the tonight, today game of the hype.
I know.
And that's why I have a tendency to trust them. And they've been in the business a long time. And they're seasoned veterans in what they do. You know, she, Mountain Goat, supposedly is a professional private investigator. She knows how to find this stuff. She knows how to know what is reliable and what is not. You know, now he's not there, but Susan, you know, was his wife. You know, they had been at this for 20 years. They didn't just do this overnight. 20 years. So that's why I trust their intel.
Karen Hudis is no slouch either, right? Karen Hudis is no slouch.
No.
Karen Hudis.
See, Karen for 20 years was the legal counsel to the World Bank. So she knows what's going on. So that's another version. See, but Karen doesn't talk about dinar and dong.
No.
And the currency revalues. Karen quietly refers to a global currency reset that it needs to happen. Yeah. But she doesn't say it's going to happen. She doesn't say how it's going to happen or when it's going to happen. She just says it needs to happen. But she gets it.
Yes.
You see.
Yeah, I got you. Well, listen, Dave, thank you so much. I don't want to take any more of your time. I think there's a lot of other callers that would love to get in on this. And trying to get hold of Jeffrey West. I'm in Toronto, and he lives
here. I know,
Jeff. Is there a way that maybe I could email you and you could give me his number, a way to reach him? If that would be okay.
I can give you his email.
Okay. So should I send you an email to get that from you?
I will forward. Here's what I'll do. Out of respect to Jeffrey, send me an email, and then I will forward that to Jeffrey and let him get in touch with you because I want to respect him.
Perfect. I appreciate that. Yes, I can appreciate what you're saying. Thank you so much, Dave. Have a great night. Thank you for the work you do.
Thank you. Appreciate it. Great.
Okay, buddy. Take care. Okay.
All right. Bye. Yeah. Okay. Going on to another caller who is all ones, which means that you're calling in through Skype, and that's what that means. So here we go on to the next caller with all ones. I hope you're ready for me. It's coming up. You're on the air with me with Dave. Who do I have here? Hello. Hello, hello. Did you step away for a little bit and have you come back? Are you there?
Hello.
Okay, there we are. Hi. You're on the air with Dave. Who do I have here?
Hi, Dave. This is Faith.
Hi, Faith. Where are you calling from?
I'm calling from Illinois.
Okay. What can I help you with?
Well, I just wanted to thank you for the call tonight and mention that, you know, this whole issue with the NDA coming out, when it did and the way it did and from who mostly brought it out, I really, you know, I'm anxious to see whether, in fact, there is really ever going to be one. You know, I just don't feel like, in the end, there really will be one. And you know, so I'm taking a wait-and-see approach about that. But then I'm taking a wait-and-see approach about a lot of things. And while I'm ready for this, and while I certainly, you know, do have plans, and I end up with 5 million or 50 or 100, you know, it doesn't really matter. You know, it's part of the pay it forward, and like what's been discussed, you know, there's a reason for this transfer of wealth going on right now.
Sure.
I'm very excited about it, and I feel very blessed to be a part of it. And I love what I'm hearing with the community and most all of the people that are involved. You know, they're all talking about, you know, what can we do to make a difference? And I just think that's a beautiful thing, and that's what it takes. Plus, more and more people are waking up every day. And I'm also very excited about that because now, you know, the awake are the majority. And, you know, where a couple of years ago it wasn't that way at all. And, you know, with everything being speeded up the way it is, you know, more and more are all the time. So, you know, that's all good. But on the same token, you made a comment, you know, a couple of callers ago, you know, about what do the rich do with their money. Well, I'll tell you, Dave, it's all in offshore accounts. There's
not all of it. I understand what you're saying.
It's been taken out of our country and out of our money stream here, which is part of the problem because it's all parked in offshore accounts. Although because of Basel III being in the process of being implemented, those accounts are being, you know, looked into, and there's transparency coming on board within the system. But this is a system right now which, you know, you mentioned FDIC and there not being enough insurance. There absolutely isn't enough insurance. Not only that, but they have up to 99 years to pay a claim. So so that's an issue. And there's a $700 trillion derivative bubble out there about to burst. And the banks the ones that you claim are all too big to fail, have already provided their last will and testament in the event that they do fail. They were ordered to write their last will and testament just in case they do. So, you know, there's the one favorite guru out there who's pushing everybody, hurry, hurry, get your money into the banks. You know, do it in 5 days. They want everybody done, and hurry, hurry, get it in. Well, guess what? I have almost nothing in my bank account right now. And I don't really need to have, you know, millions of dollars in it next week or next month even. You know, as I do things and as I go about my life and I need the funds, then I can, you know, take my precious gold-backed money and convert it into you know, currency. And if the Federal Reserve notes are still what's being used, fine.
Sure.
If things change and the United States Treasury money is rolled out and this whole fraudulent fiat money system is corrected, but in the meanwhile, why are they pushing people to hurry and get their money into these banks?
Yeah, I don't know,
and, you know,
Faith. And yeah, I don't have a feel for that, and I don't know
people
why.
People really ought to think about it, don't you think, Dave? I mean,
yes.
Really?
Well, because I thought, you know, they were the ones that were saying over and over and over again about the NDA, and they're not talking about it anymore. And they're also the ones that kept saying tonight, 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 based on the reports that they're getting from their sources. And now they're saying, get it in quick, quick, quick. And I thought, why? Everything you've been telling me so far has been off the wall. What's the reason that I need to get this money in the bank so quickly? Now, it could be possibly because of rates. Now, that is a possibility. But, you know, I'm not jumping in right away. I mean, here's what I do. When it goes live, I'm looking at what are the street rates, and then I'm looking for the 800 number, and I'm going to call up, and I'm going to see, is there a better rate for that? And they're also alluding to the fact that you may want to call more than one bank. And if necessary, I'll take my one $25,000 note in to get some operating capital, and I may sit and wait. I'm going to play it hour by hour and day by day because I don't want to jump in so soon. I want to learn from others because here's what I think is going to happen. As soon as it happens, people are going to start talking on the blog site. There's going to be lots of people out there who are not going to be required to sign an NDA, but they're going to be able to talk and they're going to know what's going on. And they're going to start telling you, my friend went in and got this rate. Somebody who didn't sign an NDA can say that. And they don't have to divulge. There's so many ways to get around that. It's so ridiculous. But we're going to start hearing what's going on. And we'll have an idea of what's going on. And so part of me wants to kind of let the dust settle before I decide what I'm going to do. But that's just me. People need to make decisions for themselves. But
it's me too, Dave, because I'm not one that, you know, gets herded, you know. If they're saying, if they're telling people to do one thing, I'm likely to say, wait a minute, you know, why? What is the agenda here? And I see this as an agenda. And, you know, don't forget that this whole government shutdown issue is about to be brought up again next month.
Yeah, I know, right? Yep, because when they settled that in October, all they did was kick the can down the road 3 months.
That's right.
That's all they did.
So, you know, there's a whole lot of stuff looming out there, and, you know, what is really going to happen here? I've gotten reports that there are arrests taking place this week, you know? But I haven't seen any evidence of it yet. I don't see anybody being paraded on my TV in my house tonight. But, you know,
I don't either.
That would be good now if all of that is beyond and past and finished with, you know, then everything would look a lot different. But right now, from where I'm sitting, there's way too many unknowns. So
I was talking with a gentleman the other day, and, you know, and he was saying, do you really, seriously, truly think this is going to happen? And my comment was, I don't put a lot of credibility in some of the blog site writers who are saying the extremely high rates, tonight, 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 and all that kind of stuff. I don't put a lot of credibility into that because it's just not reasonable and rational, and we don't do business like that in a real world. But then I said, do I really believe this is going to happen? Yes, I do, because it doesn't take a rocket scientist to know that Iraq wants to rebuild their country. They are one of the most asset-rich countries in the world, and they have been devastated by a war, and they have a huge need to rebuild their infrastructure. They have billions and billions and billions of barrels of oil to sell, and they don't even have running water in parts of their country. So it's common sense their currency is going to revalue. It's not a question if, it's a matter of when and at what rate. That's the bottom line for me that makes common sense. And that's what we don't really know, and everything else is just speculation. But it's in their best interest to have it revalued at a higher rate, because the higher the rate that is on the open market, the less will be their cost for the things they need to import into their country to rebuild their infrastructure.
Well, in the 10-year plan, it talks about bringing the currency back in line within 50 cents of the Kuwait money.
Right. See, they were, for decades, they were right closely in line with the Kuwaiti dinar. And the asset-wise, they're a stronger country than Kuwait. So the asset of the currency is based on what is the assets that you have, what is the value you have, what is your debt, and in conjunction with your population. That's how they base the currency, the country's asset. And Iraq's is more asset-rich than Kuwait, because all Kuwait has is oil. It's just a tiny little country with oil. Iraq's a pretty big country, and they've got tons and tons of oil. They've got supposedly gold in mines they haven't even mined yet. And that Tigris-Euphrates River Valley is one of the most prosperous agriculture zones in the world. It's a high prosperous agriculture zone because they have the water coming out of those rivers to use as irrigation for great agriculture development. So you see, they have a lot of strong assets in their country. And so their currency could be valued fairly high. So we just don't know. That's why I don't think it's any problem justifying or thinking that the 340 to 390 rate is realistic. I think it's very realistic. So.
Right, but like you mentioned also, once you consider the words private placement and bring the thought of the oil credits, which we've been told about, into it, there could be a possibility of us, you know, in the United States, getting that higher value, you know?
Well, there was a time that Mountain Goat was saying, yes, there would be a higher rate in the United States only, and it appeared it was going to be only for 30 days. There is this aspect where the United States wants to be paid back for the war. I mean, we were the ones that stepped up, that delivered their country from a ruthless dictator, that gave them democracy, that gave them the ability to totally rebuild and be better than what they ever were before, and we paid a big price for that.
Please. We attacked a sovereign country.
Yes.
On trumped-up nonsense. When the rest of the world was saying, wait a minute, I don't think there's any weapons of mass destruction there. The UN was saying, hold on a minute, guys. And we went in ahead anyway because they didn't have a central bank.
Faith, I don't disagree with what you just said. Okay, wait, time out.
We declared war on them.
I understand. I don't disagree with what you just said. But that was years ago. It still had a cost to us, okay? It had a deep financial cost to us. We spent over $1 trillion on that war, and what I'm referring to is that today, at this current time, the United States government can be saying to the government of Iraq, you're going to become so wealthy, we would like to get paid back. I'm not saying it was right. I'm not saying I agree with what they did. I'm not saying that they weren't ruthless necessarily, the United States, and what they did. I'm only talking pure economics of this current day right now. Does that make sense?
Okay.
Yeah.
Yes, but,
yeah.
There was still a huge financial
extraction from us in the United States for what happened. And if Iraq is going to get a lot of money and be really wealthy, we could be saying, we want that back. We want that back. And War
is
hell.
We could be saying that, or that could have all been part of the plan too. When it was, you know, us who put the sanctions on them and devalued their money in the first place, and when Bush made the statement about, you know, we would get paid back for this, you know.
Yeah,
I mean,
I'm not justifying what
criminal.
Happened, what took place. I'm not justifying
it's
any of it. I'm
criminal.
Not saying it was right. Right. I'm only speaking what is the current, right now, present economic situation. And that's a very high probability they may be saying, and that could be some of the reasons why they're explaining that. I don't necessarily agree with it. I'm just trying to explain about why we could be having a higher rate in the United States that the rest of the world is not going to get. That's all. Because
yes.
why would we get that?
Makes sense,
you see.
Yeah.
Why should we, the United States, only have the higher rate that the rest of the world doesn't get? Well, there has to be some reason behind that. And it could be very well because our government has said with the government of Iraq, we want to get paid back. Because we are a country that's deeply in debt, deeply, deeply in debt, and we would like to get out of debt, and this is a way for us to get out of debt. And that's all I'm saying.
Well, that's true. That's true, you know. And unfortunately, you know, all of the debt that we allegedly owe is really banksters' debt. And, you know,
yep.
I wish people would step up and say, wait a minute, that's not ours. And everything gets great, you know.
I think we're eventually going to get there. I do, because I think when the global currency reset takes place, we're going to see the Federal Reserve go away.
Well,
now,
I think it's
ask me logistically how that's going to happen. I don't know at this time. But I think we're going to see the Federal Reserve going away because the Federal Reserve is a private corporation based on fiat currency. And those duties need to be rolled over to the U.S. Treasury so they come under a government accountability versus a private corporation.
Right. Yeah.
And I think that will happen eventually.
Well, I hope so. I certainly do. It'll be interesting to see how this plays out.
It will be.
Oh, and let me ask you this. Have you heard about Agenda 21?
No, I haven't.
Oh, you might want to look into that. That was formulated through the United Nations. And, you know, when you speak about the Gates and the vaccinations, and you know, you might really want to check into Agenda 21 and just take a look and see what that's about.
Yeah. While you bring that up, I'm not saying I agree with everything the Gates Foundation does, but there's a lot of good things they do. And the good things don't make the news. The stuff that makes the news is the stuff that we don't like, you know. But, you know, I mean, it's a huge organization and operation, and they're not all conscious people.
And,
but there's a lot of good things they do.
I haven't heard of any. When you look into it and you look into the sterilization programs that are taking place in the guise of vaccinations that are supposed to be good for people.
Faith, you're only talking about 3, 4, maybe 5 programs of hundreds of programs that they have that go on where they give money to. Those are the ones that don't make the news, that don't make the Facebook page, that don't go around to all of us on the Internet. Those are the ones that you would have to get on the inside on their website and actually dig down in to find the where does all this money go and how they operate. And so, you know, I mean, they have hundreds, if not thousands, of programs that they give money to. But we're so quick to want to point out 5 or 6 that we think are evil.
Well, when they're pretty evil like that, Dave, what difference do the rest make? I mean, doesn't it make sense that they would all be bad when they're taking part in
I know they give away hundreds of millions of dollars to private colleges so that poor students, poor people can go to college because of the Gates Foundation. There are There are people, there are young people out there in poverty that could not go to college without the Gates Foundation's money. And
you
they do
that in Germany,
for tens of thousands of students every year. See,
there's no reason for the colleges to be charging what they're charging. In Germany, it's $150 a semester.
Well, that's a great that's a great hypothetical, but it's not reality to the person who grows up in a poor family would like to go to college here in the United States and can't get there. That's a nice hypothetical. Tell that to a person, a young person, who is a great high school student, is an honor roll student, but is growing up in a single poverty family and has no money to go to college. Do you think they're going to turn the Gates Foundation money down? No. You know, we're not Germany. If it's $150 in Germany, it's because the government is subsidizing it, because you can't fund a college on that type of money.
Not too long ago, our colleges were not charging what they are now. They're just way out of whack. And you know, that's a whole other subject. But I appreciate what you say, and I understand you have a personal relationship with them. But I would just urge you, because I know you're a truth seeker, you know, just check out Agenda 21 and just have a look at it, just for your own knowledge, you know, so that you know.
Yeah, again. I'm going back to that. I'm not saying that they are a totally conscious organization. No, they're not. I don't agree with everything that they do. But we're so quick to create somebody being evil. When, why? They're responsible for their decisions. They're accountable for their decisions. They create their own karma for themselves. And I'm going to be thankful for the tens of thousands of people that get to go to college and the hundreds of other programs that they do good things for good, innocent people, you see, because they have billions and billions and billions of dollars that they're giving away every year. The Gates Foundation is worth more than something like 30 or 40 countries around the world. Bill Gates goes into a country, and his foundation is worth than that whole country, some of these countries he goes to.
You know what? If they really wanted to do something, they would take care of the starving people in this country to start with. And
do you know they give more money
consider...
to? Do you know they give more money to food banks than anybody else in the United States? They do.
Okay.
You see, we're so quick to judge and not know the facts. Because there's one thing that they don't do, so we think they're evil. And then we make a judgment. And we're guilty of judgment. We can be just as guilty of judging as they can of being evil for what they do. Because they're both energetically the same from a position of consciousness.
Well, I think sterilizing people without their will or their knowledge is pretty evil, Dave.
But energetically, what does that mean? We are just as guilty if we are judging. Because judgment does not change or heal. It just does not. It's love that changes and heals. And we are commanded to love them even when we consider them evil. Otherwise, we're just as much in the war as they are. We're just as much in the cycle as they are. We're just as guilty as they are, because our world is based on the perception of our thoughts.
That's true.
And so if we condemn them as being guilty and evil, then we are just as guilty and evil in our thoughts. If you come back to the words of Jesus, either in the Bible or in the Course of Miracles, he says very, very, very clearly, do not judge. Let it be. It's when you let it be is when you release the energy of love to change and heal. as long as we stay in the energy of judgment, we continue to hold them into that position, and they won't change.
Wow, that's a powerful thought.
It is, and it works.
It is.
It works,
okay.
Faith. You want to change the world? Love them. Don't judge them, because you are putting out massive energy of love, and it's the energy of love that changes and heals. The energy of judgment holds them in that position, and they stay there. It's so easy for us to want to get caught up into a cause or something that we think is really important, and then we start judging them as being evil, and in the process, we're putting ourselves into the position of being better. That is what is called dualism, and that's what creates the problems of the world. It's the mentality and the thought process and the energy of dualism that creates the world's problems. Jesus said, do not love your neighbor as yourself. I will love Bill Gates as myself. Even if I think he's doing some evil things, I'm going to choose to love him as myself. Because if I want him to change, that's what it takes. I can criticize him. I can condemn him. I can call him evil, but it will never change him. Love is what changes.
Well,
it's a power
that
comes from within us that changes at the level of the heart. And that's what changes the world. And so what, to me, our responsibility is to rise above the drama that we see out there and what we think is evil all around the world and just let it be. And by letting it be, love begins to infiltrate into it and work itself out. Because if people are doing what we call evil things, it's because of a darkness at the heart. And that's where you have to go after the cause, at the heart level, not at the surface level. It takes a change in perception on their part and our part, both, to change the world. Okay, I'm done with that.
Well, all right. You've given me a lot to chew on, and I appreciate it. And thank you so much.
Well, thank you for listening.
Okay.
Okay, have a great evening.
You too.
Okay, good night. Yeah.
Tonight.
Okay, folks, I want you to know I've got two callers left on the list, and I've got about 7 minutes left, so I'm going to come now to the next caller. Again, has the numbers 11111, which means you're calling in on Skype, I probably believe. You're on the air with Dave. Who do I have here? Hello, you're barely coming in. Hello? Yeah, but you're way, way, way off in the background. You need to get up closer to a microphone because I can barely hear you. No, that's not working. I don't know if this one's going to work because I can. It's like you're 10 feet away from the microphone. That's what it sounds like to me. And you're breaking up and you're scratchy. It's probably because you're talking on Skype. And now you can hear me, so that means you also have your speakers on, and I'm hearing feedback. So I'm going to have to take you off the air for right now, and I'm going to go on to the next caller. I'm sorry. I wish I could do better, but I think that's not fair to everybody who's listening. So, okay. All right. I'm going to go to one more caller, and this area code is 970. Area code 970. You're on the air here with Dave. Who do I have here?
This is Greg.
Hey, is it Greg? Is that right?
Yes. Yes, Greg.
Hi, Greg. How are you
today?
From
Durango. Hi, I'm good. How are you?
Good. What can I help you with?
Good. Oh, I just have a few questions. I'd like to first say, show me the money.
Yeah. Yeah.
I'm getting a little bit skeptical. I've been on board about all this, and I'm pretty positive and sensible, level-headed, I think. But I read these blogs, and just like a minute ago, I see one, Exigen, says, do not, by any circumstance, go to the bank. Do not call the bank. Here, people's talking about everybody has a daydream, what they're going to do with all our wealth, and most of it's good, most all of it. But I'm not too sure it's even going to happen, and I feel good when I listen to you because you make me feel a little more reassured about it. But I just don't know what to think about all the, like the Tonys, and I look back on some of the old ones in August, and I mean it's the same thing every day.
Yeah. Great.
And
I
read
I
something. I
just take them with a grain of salt. I don't give a lot of credibility to what is there. I'm not going to get into a battle with them. That's their issue. And if people want to hook themselves into the Tonys, that's their choice. They get to choose what they do. I try to come back and realistically look at it. I like what I see that comes from Zap and Susan and Mountain Goat because they're very realistic. They usually only come out about once a week. They're not hyping it, and they give you some good detail about what's going on. And I know their backgrounds.
Right.
I know they're
They're
seasoned veteran people in this what you would call the private investigative field. They're very good at what they do, and that's what I look for. The others, they're just, to me, they're just spewing out there what they're being spoon-fed. And personally, I think some of the stuff they're being fed is disinformation. Okay. That's me personally.
Well, sometimes I wonder if they're not just making it up. I mean, I want to believe in this, and I see where it could truly be true and happen. But I read some of that stuff, and I think, you know, is this a scam? Or, you know, stay away from the banks. Do not call the bank. Well, I'm not calling the bank anyway, but it's almost like don't shed no more light on this or somebody's going to call us on it.
Well,
you know, it just makes me skeptical, and I don't want to be that way.
Yeah, and I understand. But I can understand what you're saying about don't call the banks because the banks are getting inundated and swamped with people. Remember, there's reported to be over 5 million people here in the United States who have a dinar, and there's only 200,000 to 400,000 that are reading the blog sites. So that means about, 70-80% of the people out there who hold dinar are hearing it secondhand, and so they hear it's been done, so they run into the bank. And the banks are getting swamped. They're getting
swamped. I could see that.
And they're getting inundated, and that's why they're saying stay away from the banks, because you're going to create chaos with them. They're getting frustrated. They're getting inundated with stuff that they cannot comment on, cannot say anything on, cannot do anything until the actual currency has been reset.
Okay.
That's when we go to the banks.
Right.
And we go rationally, we go reasonably, and we don't all go in at the same time. Otherwise, you're standing in line with 40 people who could be having $1 million in their hand, and that's security risk. Okay? So that's why. But be patient. The most the most important thing you can do is to keep yourself in the place of control. Be centered. And be at peace with yourself.
Oh, yeah, I am. You know, I have a job. I work hard. If this comes true, it's a blessing.
Right.
And if not, I'll continue my life just like it is.
Okay.
So.
Well, I don't mean to cut you off, but I'm down to less than a minute, and they're going to cut me off.
All right. Well, I really appreciate what you do every week. We kind of look forward to it every week. So.
Thanks, Greg.
God bless you.
Okay, good night. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, folks, because I'm down where my says I've got about 40 seconds left to be on the air. I want to thank everybody. Wonderful calls tonight. Wonderful discussions tonight. It gets me going. I enjoy this. I enjoy the discussions. I hope that it's helpful for you. I love it when you folks call in and we can carry on some open discussions and let it flow, because sometimes a lot of what you have to say, it's what's very important. So, I'll be back next week. I'm going to do this every Wednesday night. And I'm going to start leading us into what can we be anticipating coming up. Okay? So, folks, thanks a lot. Again, this is Dave on the Sedona Connection. Feel free to send me an email, the same thing, the Sedona Connection at msn.com. Good night.